Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. So my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
Our lives aren't like they used to be. They're busier. Early morning Zooms, grabbing coffee to make that in-office meeting, getting to your kid's soccer game on time. Life is different, and so is advertising. To reach any audience, you need your message out there in all media, broadcast to streaming, on screens, and right to the ears of your customers. And that's what we do at Odyssey. Let's build a media campaign that targets the customers you know and want to reach more of, right here in our community. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. This week, we're covering stories that touch on red flags of abuse that are overlooked. In one case, alleged warning signs may have been glossed over due to a family connection. In another, a faith community reportedly allowed a system of abuse to go unchecked. We'll start off with the Bob Rose Show out of Sky 973 in Florida. This week, he covered two crimes that we'll be keeping an eye on. Here's the first.
On Saturday, 24-year-old Cherish Nunley, mother of two, found fatally shot in a parking lot. According to News 4 Jax, GoFundMe page created for her family. She was a devoted mother, a bright, beautiful girl who was killed in cold blood. Following day, fishermen discovered the body of Tiffany Felton beneath a bridge on Blanding Boulevard. This was an unnecessary killing. A.J. Jordan, outreach coordinator with Mad Dads, told the outlet. It's very sad. All right. And then Monday, deputies were called to a rooming house in the city's Phoenix neighborhood where another woman was found unresponsive. And Sheriff Sergeant told the outlet that details surrounding her death were not immediately clear. So the online speculation is going to be intense,
sure.
And we'll see if they are related. I mean, you kind of wonder, you're like, well, would it be better off if they are related? Because just one person doing all the killing, all you got to do is catch one person.
Right.
Or do you have three different murderers running around? I mean, that's not good either.
Well, because if you really think about it, okay, people, and I guess it's just our psyche from too many movies, we get all wrapped up over one person doing a bunch of stuff. In an area covering the size of Jacksonville, do you know how many people are committing crimes every single day that you could worry about, but you don't? But you hear about one because he does something more than once, and all of a sudden, people freak out.
Well, it's the nature of the crime.
Oh, I get
serious
that.
And
I get that.
And
but they don't even know what goes on every day.
No, that's true.
So,
Rose also covered a story that's made national news this week. The discovery of 18-year-old Anna Kepner, who was found dead underneath a bed on a carnival cruise. He also discussed Kepner's stepbrother, who is possibly a suspect in her death, according to reports.
You hear about this this cruise where the, you know, the girl, the woman on it or whatever, was found dead, like,
teenager.
Under a bed, yeah. And it's like, you know, things happen, and you wonder, you know, and see anything on it for a couple of days. But here's the weird one. Okay, you ready for this? Anna Kepner, okay, the deceased younger stepbrother, a suspect in her killing, apparently allegedly had a creepy obsession with the Florida cheerleader and was once caught climbing on top of her while she slept. And this is according to the father of the 18-year-old girl. I'm sorry, the father of the 18-year-old girl's ex ex-boyfriend. Okay, did you catch all that? So Anna Kepner was dating a guy, and this guy told his dad, hey, the kid's a creeper. Kepner's 16-year-old stepbrother apparently was obsessed with her and relentlessly pursued her despite their newly blended family. Stephen Weston told this to Inside Edition, citing conversations that he had with his son. She was scared of him because he was always carrying around a big knife. Oh, that's not creepy at all. He's your new stepbrother. He's a couple years younger, and he's carrying a big knife around.
Ooh, that's weird.
That is. This was an interview that I guess was conducted, aired anyway, yesterday. Weston said his son Joshua, who dated Kepner, once saw her stepbrother come into the room when she was sleeping and actually get on top of her. He's like infatuated, attracted to her like crazy. He always wanted to date her. I think if I was her boyfriend, yeah. I would have kind of nipped that in the bud.
Had a little talk, maybe. You know?
Yes.
Yeah,
just a quiet, little quiet conversation.
Uh-huh.
Weston said that his son tried to warn Kepner's parents, but told, you know, basically his son told him, hey, they don't want to believe me.
Mm-hmm.
Which, how uncomfortable of a situation, I get it. But
that's awkward, yeah.
You know, people, I guess it all depends on the circumstances, but when somebody tells you, you know, this kid's a creeper and he's really weird about her and they're supposed to be, you know, live together in the same house and all that, and it's a newly blended family. It's not like they grew up, you know, together per se.
You got to listen to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The FBI is questioning the high school senior stepbrother after her body reportedly was found stuffed under her bed and covered with life vests inside her cabin on November 8th. And this was a cruise they were on. The teen had gone on a six-day cruise with her father, her stepmother, and her 14-year-old brother and 16-year-old stepbrother. The ship was returning to Port Miami when her body was found. And
that's so sad.
It is. It is. She was.
And how he thought he was going to get by with it. I mean, that's. But again, he's a kid. He doesn't know.
Well, I mean, if people don't come forward, you know, mm-hmm. and say anything like, hey,
I think
the kid had, there were some issues there.
Mm-hmm.
And she was set to graduate in the spring from Temple Christian School in Titusville. She died on board the Carnival vessel at 11:17 a.m. They believe the funeral was held Thursday in Titusville. Her biological mother, Heather, told Inside Edition that she was barred from attending due to longstanding family tensions.
Wow.
But will do what she has to do to say goodbye. She even talked about going in disguise, which she said is difficult to do because she's 4'9".
Yeah.
She was divorced from her daughter's father 13 years ago. Wow. Hold a grudge much?
Yeah.
13 years and you're still not allowed to, like, a family event? Heather Kempner said she hadn't seen her daughter regularly in years since moving to Oklahoma, but was proud of Anna, who had dreams of joining the U.S. Navy and eventually becoming a K-9 police officer. She was a great kid,
wow.
Blah, blah, blah. FBI leading the investigation since Anna died in international waters has remained tight-lipped on details. But, if that is the case, it turns out to be true. It's a step, her stepbrother. That is, that's really creepy. Really creepy.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. So my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
For our final story this week, we have a deep dive into a sex abuse case linked to the Old Apostolic Lutheran Church in Duluth, Minnesota. Andy Mannix of the Star Tribune and Jessica Lusenhop of ProPublica, reporters who investigated on the ongoing fallout, both joined WCCO Radio this week to discuss the case. First, here's Andy Mannix speaking with Chad Hartman.
She and I kind of came across this story together and felt that it was worthy of the resources of both of our news organizations. It was clear that there was a lot of it was a complicated dynamic that was going on in this church that was resulting in these kids being abused without any sort of accountability for decades, and it's the kind of story that we really wanted to make sure we did right. So yeah, we decided to partner up and take it on together.
It is disgusting behavior. We've read these stories before. It's sad to know. It still continues, and as you said, decades. So let's talk about the church first of all. Explain to our audience again, Star Tribune, it's a must read. Tell people about this church and how it's not affiliated in the traditional way.
Yeah, so the Old Apostolic Lutheran Church, often called OLC, sometimes the members are called Bunners, is the slang term that they use to describe themselves, because they sort of wear their hair up in a recognizable bun. It's not actually part of mainstream Lutheranism, although it has that in the name. It's actually part of a religion called Lestadianism, which came over with Swedish-Finnish immigrants in the 1800s. It's very conservative, very traditional, I guess you can kind of think of the town in Footloose, no dancing.
Yeah, right.
Very patriarchal society, but, they're Christians, and I think a lot of them are good people. A lot of the congregation, some of them knew what was going on and some of them didn't. But they very much see the preachers of these churches as God is speaking through them. And if they want to go to heaven, it's very important to obey the preachers. So in this case, when you had preachers saying, let's deal with it this way. Let's deal with it by sitting down and forgiving one another and then just forgetting it ever happened. What we learned is people really listened, not just the kids that were abused, but their parents as well.
Well, and you lead with this, and it's powerful from the get-go. This is Clint Massey, who is featured for his abhorrent behavior throughout. And early on, you tell the story of this girl and had recently told her parents that he had touched her genitals, groped her on the shirt, and a preacher and leader of the church was there in front of the girl, her father, and the leader of the church, Daryl Bruckelmeyer, at one point asked for forgiveness, looming over her. The three men are weeping, and then the girl's dad and preacher allowed the man who had been accused, Massey, of sexually abusing her since kindergarten, to hug her. She would tell police 15 years later, it was one of the worst things ever. You want to bring somebody in a story right away, that's the way to do it. And that's typical of what is happening during this run where this abuse just continued and continued.
Yeah, and Massey, he was ultimately convicted of sexual abuse. I think he pleaded guilty late last year, was sentenced earlier this year. He's in prison now. But what we found out was that the church knew about this for a long time. They knew that he had a problem, Massey. They knew he was not well. They told police that when police brought them in about it. And by doing this, you know, these forgive and forget sessions, they allowed him to continue to prey on more children. So it's a little bit different than how it works in the Catholic Church, you know, where they're moving people around
right.
to sort
yep.
of hide it. Mm-hmm. They're saying, you know, we're going to deal with it this way, you know, God, kind of God's law over man's law. And then you're never allowed to talk about it again. And if you do, then the sin is on you. You're the sinner now. You know, and
can
you
I just stop? Can I stop you on that?
Yeah.
One? Just saying that is haunting, chilling, and indefensible. If you speak of this again, then the sin is on you. That is troubling to the nth level.
And you see it in these, the, you know, not just the trauma of the abuse, but not being able to talk about it. You see this, you know, really having a deep impact on these girls' lives as they get older, you know, not being able to talk about it, just having to sit with it for so long, not being able to get over it, you know, and seeing this guy, Clint Massey, in church with other young girls, you know, sitting on his lap and things like this, that I think the trauma of that was for some of them worse than, you know, the abuse itself, just the in terms of the lasting impact and their spiritual relationship, their physical, you know, their personal relationships with men, their relationships with their families. You know, there's a mm-hmm. lot of mental illness that flourished, I think, in these girls because they weren't ever able to really address it. And yeah, you know, and you have the person facilitating it is the person who they trust more than anyone else in the world. And, you know, I'm talking about their preacher and as well as, you know, in this case, the father being there. So that was really the focus of our investigation, wasn't on Massey, who again is in prison, but it was about why was he allowed to, you know, to continue to prey upon kids in this church for so long when they could have stopped him.
Okay, so let's point out again, as you said, Massey did plead guilty to four counts. He's now sentenced to 7.5 years. But here's Brockelmeyer. Am I saying that right? Is that the proper pronunciation?
Daryl Brockelmeyer.
Brockelmeyer, okay. Was not charged in connection. And as you and Jessica write, Kimberly Lowe, a lawyer and crisis manager for the church, said its preachers are unpaid and therefore might not be legally required to report sexual abuse of children. You both followed up, asked if she believes the preachers are mandated to report this under Minnesota law, and would only say that the language of the statute is unclear.
Yep. Yeah, you know, we did ask her directly if she's saying they're not mandated reporters. We talked to a lot of lawyers and people who teach, you know, mandated reporting law to at schools and stuff like this, and we had never heard this argument before. She was, I think, kind of hedging. She, you know, she didn't say, "Oh, well, they're not mandated reporters;
right.
they didn't violate the law." She was just saying, "Well, maybe."
Yeah,
the language is
very vague. Yeah,
yeah, but you know, I think that that you know, but I don't know. You know, I mean, I think I'm not a lawyer, so you know, if there's a technicality loophole that someone could argue, maybe, but certainly not the spirit of the law, which is that the people who are leaders in your community, who are in charge of the community in a way, you know, whether it be clergy or teachers or a therapist, you know, they have a responsibility to make sure that something's done about this when you have a vulnerable child who is reporting that she's being harmed.
Yeah, and has been harmed over and over and over again. This is Andy Mannix from the Star Tribune. He worked on this story, obviously, for the Trib and also ProPublica. His co-writer on this story is also going to be on with Jason, so both shows believe in this so much. We want to bring coverage to it. And I just want to stay with this last part, Andy, too. Suggesting because they're unpaid, and the hint of they're unpaid compared to they're paid, that's why a leader of a faith community should not be required to report this abuse, whether it's one single time or the amount of times that you and Jessica point out doesn't pass the litmus test of just common sense and decency. I think we all know that. On the community itself, the other individuals who are attending church, Do you have a feel for how many people, how many others were aware what was going on?
I think among a lot of people who went to the church, it was an open secret. You know, there were people who told us and who told police that mothers would tell their kids to stay away from him. You know, it was sort of a whisper network. But the problem with the whisper network is you don't necessarily know who's in on it and who's not. So there were some kids who would still, you know, sit with him and sit on his lap. And that's where, you know, several of the girls were actually abused in church. And so
near their parents, right?
Yeah. Yeah. With their parents nearby, or after church at, you know, it's common for them to go to someone's house afterward and sort of visit. And, you know, the parents are there and the abuse is kind of occurring, you know, whether they knew about it or not, like at the time, I don't know, but in a lot of these cases, it was, you know, they would tell their parents afterward. And they would take it to the preachers before they'd go to police, just because that's really the leaders of their community. But I think for the mothers and the girls and some of them, you know, got older, became adults themselves, and would go to this church and see little kids that were the age that they were when they were abused sitting on the lap of Clint Massey. And that in itself was so traumatizing that, you know, it was a lot of them moved. A lot of them left the state because they just couldn't. They couldn't handle it anymore. So yeah. There's a lot of. I mean, to answer your question, I think there's a fair amount of people who knew or at least had heard rumor. Yeah.
You also write about the law getting involved, including St. Louis County Attorney, in a statement to the Tribune of ProPublica. This attorney said he spoke to a victim's mother who informed him there had been the therapeutic intervention, they were good, and that her daughter did not want anything more to be done. Without the girl's cooperation, the St. Louis County attorney said he decided he could not bring any charge against Massey, an outcome he said gives him heartache to the day. Are there people who tell you in this that the St. Louis County attorney still should have pursued it? Or they say, listen, if you don't have a parent and you don't have the victim who are willing to speak, as sad as that is, as much as it might stay with you, it's very difficult to build any case without those two individuals willing to step forward.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think, you know, when you have especially a minor, this girl, I think when she came forward herself, I think she was 16, and, you know, having her parents essentially tell the police that they're not going to cooperate after talking to their preacher, it's really hard to build a case on just the word of a minor, especially when it's a he said, she said situation, and you don't have the cooperation of the other people who could corroborate her story. And, you know, in that case, you know, it's a really sad thing. Like, by the time so that case was dropped, and then they pick it up, you know, many years later, and they go back to that girl, and she, you know, cooperated and helped with their investigation. But how the law works in Minnesota is there's a clock starts ticking after you make a report like that, where if the person isn't charged in a few years, and then you come forward and make another report, you know, 10 years later, they can't, there's a statute of limitations that's run out. So even though she in many ways got this investigation going, that he was not charged with her sexual abuse. He was charged with sexual abuse of some of the other girls who hadn't come forward until 2023. So you really see the church intervention there leading to a victim not being able to get justice.
Last thing, and I'll let you go, and I thank you for your time. Considering what has happened with the Massey, considering the investigation due to other powerful people at the church, what is the status of the church? What are people saying today?
That's a great question. You know, Daryl Breckelmeyer and some other people who we wanted to talk to at the church didn't talk to us. You know, they had talked to police, and we were able to get some of their statements through that. but they didn't want to answer our questions. And so in terms of what, you know, if they're reading the story, if you know, church on Sunday is going to be, there's going to be some people coming in with some serious questions. I just don't know.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. So my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Lucin Hop joined Jason DeRusha for more on the disturbing situation.
To even call it a cover-up sort of understates what this church was doing.
That's the thing that really drew us to the story in the first place. I mean, sadly, finding out about allegations of child sex abuse within faith communities is, you know, unfortunately, we've heard about a lot of instances of this. I think what we felt was unique here and particularly troubling was the way that victims were handled once they came forward and disclosed either to their parents or to their preachers, and were sort of talked into, in some cases, pressured into this idea of forgiving the abuser and then forgetting about it afterwards and never speaking of it again. And after having interviewed some of the alleged victims myself, but also after having read hundreds of pages of the victims' reports to law enforcement, it's so clear that this really destroyed a lot of these girls and women. And the idea that they were just sort of supposed to forget about it is just really troubling.
You start your story talking about a young girl who first was in kindergarten when she encountered this supposedly respected member of this old apostolic Lutheran church in Duluth. And it's hard not to read it and be like, my God. So she was abused as a kid, kindergarten, first grade. It was happening for a couple years. But then once she told her parents that he had abused her sexually, she would describe what happened, because she was brought into like an office building for a meeting with the preacher from the church and with her abuser, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That was, again, one of the things that really stood out to us was this particular victim's account. She first came forward in 2017. She was interviewed again in 2023 and basically told the story of having disclosed to her parents going to the preachers, and then the preacher's advice being, we all need to get together, meaning her, and she's, you know, grade school age, her father, the preacher, and Clint Massey, the perpetrator in this case. And that sort of, she's this tiny little girl, you know, you read her description of this meeting. She's a tiny little girl. There are three big men looming over her. She has absolutely no power in this situation. And she's basically being told, hey, you've got to forgive this guy. And afterwards, again, this is according to her report to the police, afterwards, you are never to speak of this again. And another thing that really stood out to me about her account was that, you know, as she got older, again, when she reported this in 2017 and when she reported it again in 2023, was that the silence was almost as negatively impactful as the abuse itself. Obviously, the abuse was horrible, but she talked specifically about the fact that I was never allowed to speak about this again really just kind of seemed to just crush her spirit.
You know, there's sort of a trend in schools right now. They call it this restorative justice, restorative circle, where and I had this circumstance with my son who was bullied by a kid, and he had to then go through this counseling thing and then have this encounter with the bully. And you can understand the potential positive side of this, especially if two friends who become estranged or maybe have kids doing something dumb where you're like, yeah, you can find some forgiveness. But it's quite different with an adult, a sexual abuser, and the forget. The forgive part is one thing, but then we never speak of this again. You had a quote in the story from the county attorney in St. Louis County, the assistant district attorney who prosecuted this. And we should say that Clint Massey did plead guilty to four counts of felony criminal sexual conduct with victims under the age of 13. He was sentenced to a sickeningly short 7.5 years in prison. But that is what the crime is. And you guys did try to reach out to the church officials. You tried to reach out to Clint Massey. He's still locked up, right?
Correct.
Yep. So nobody, none of them commented. No surprise here, considering the whole thing was forgive and forget. We don't speak of anything. But talk about what Mike Ryan, the assistant district attorney, the prosecutor, what he said about, because this is the bigger picture here.
I think the thing that disturbed him the most, so this was supposed to go to trial. All the victims who were set to testify had flown into Duluth, and a jury.
Finally, they get a chance to publicly talk about it.
They
right?
get a, exactly. They're, it's for some of them their very first time speaking about this to anyone except for perhaps a family member, or you know, they're going to be able to tell their story publicly for the first time. A jury was impaneled and seated, and an opening statements were about to take place. And Massey, at a very late stage in this process, pleaded guilty. Now, of course, from a prosecutor's perspective, like you want to win the case, you want to get him, you know, pleaded guilty, and so maybe that's good enough. But the sense that I always got from kind of everybody we talked to in the story, the prosecutor, the sheriff's detectives, the victims, the alleged victims, is that this one person going to prison does not in any way, shape, or form, that's not the end of the problem. That's certainly not the end of accountability. And I think what we sort of uncovered through the reporting process and through, you know, going through all these case files is that there was a real enabling by members of this community, in particular, again, the preachers, like former members of this church told us over and over again that the preacher's advice is in certain ways seen as coming directly from God. And you're asking the preachers for advice on everything from something as small as what car to buy to like who you're supposed to marry. And so if a preacher is coming to you, especially if you're a child, and telling you, this is the way we deal with this, we ask for forgiveness and we forget about it, they take that extremely seriously. And to the point where one parent I even talked about, who's no longer in the church, was very remorseful about the fact that she took that advice over the well-being and the safety of her own kids. And she currently just feels awful looking back about that.
In this case, this, even though this church has the word Lutheran in the name, it's not it's kind of a weird deal, isn't it? It's not exactly what we would think of as a traditional Lutheran church.
We don't think they have any real connections to, I guess I would say, mainstream Lutheran churches. It's a smaller faith community, but it has a pretty big presence in Minnesota, in Duluth, somewhat in the Twin Cities as well. And there are churches, there's 33 locations across the United States. And I guess it's worth saying that in the course of our months of reporting, we talked to alleged victims all over the country, not just about this case with Clint Massey, but about other potential perpetrators. That reporting is ongoing. And also, you know, mandatory reporter laws change are different state to state.
Yeah.
But based on our reporting, you know, these preachers really had an obligation to call the police and simply did not.
Well, and you look at this and think, okay, if this wasn't just one church's sort of rogue way of this is how we're going to deal with abuse. This you guys had a policy from the church that this is how it's handled. And so I find it impossible to believe that this one case, this one perpetrator in Duluth is the only perpetrator. That you would, I mean, we can't know for sure, but you have to believe that it's likely that there have been other similar sort of forgive and forget sessions all at these 33 churches around the country.
That's where our reporting is taking us. I can't say too much about it at this stage, but I mean, the story's been up for less than 24 hours and I'm getting phone calls and emails from people saying, you got to keep pushing, you got to go deeper. This is not just one bad apple. So that is certainly the indication we're getting early on here.
You know, people knew about this, right? People who were members of the church knew about it. Obviously, the people in leadership. Have you heard of, you know, did people, are they mad? Did they leave the church? Where are they on this?
So interestingly, of the group of alleged victims, of the nine that the prosecution and the sheriff's investigation identified, some of those victims are still in the church, and some of them that we reached out to specifically declined to speak with us because they're still a part of the church. They sort of feel like they got justice. They're trying to put this behind them and they really don't want to talk about it anymore. And then other of the others in the sort of alleged victim pool have left because of this and are incredibly angry. We're, you know, again, at the stage where it just kind of looked like they were never going to get to tell their stories publicly. They felt silenced all over again and were very, very upset about that, which is why they decided to talk to us for this investigation.
Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from Odyssey's The On Deadline podcast. To keep up on these stories and our weekly updates, you can subscribe to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. So my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
On Aspire with Emma Greed, we talk about mindset, ambition, and the work that actually moves the needle. Listen to Aspire with Emma Greed, available where you get your podcasts.